Word of mouth.
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 From New Hampshire Public Radio, this is Word of Mouth. I'm Virginia Prescott. We turn now to the untold story behind a pivotal moment in history. Here is President Harry Truman defending his decision to bomb two Japanese cities in August of 1945.
Having found the atomic bomb, we have used it. We have used it against those who attack us without warning at Pearl Harbor, against those who have starved and beaten and executed American prisoners of war, against those who have abandoned all pretense of obeying international laws of warfare. We have used it in order to shorten the agony of war, in order to save the lives of thousands and thousands of young Americans.
The development and deployment of the atomic bomb is generally told as a narrative driven by powerful men like Oppenheimer, Truman, and Stimson operating at the highest levels of government. What few people know is how many women played a crucial role, albeit unknowingly, in one of the most significant turning points in history. Denise Kiernan interviewed several women who worked in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, a secret government-built town created as part of the Manhattan Project. Their stories, combined with detailed reporting, come together in a new book called The Girls of Atomic City, The Untold Story of the Women Who Helped Win World War II. And Denise Kiernan, we welcome you to Word of Mouth.
Thank you so much. It's great to be on.
The town of Oak Ridge, Tennessee did not appear on any maps in the U.S. Tell us a little bit about how it was built and what these women were doing there.
The town of Oak Ridge was actually purpose-built. Some people think it was repurposed for the war, but actually it did not exist before late 1942 when they broke ground and did not appear on any maps until 1949. The government went in, and really between late 1942 and mid-1945, took what was really a very unpopulated, not exclusively unpopulated, but, you know, a very sparsely populated area in East Tennessee, and turned it into a town of 75,000 residents using more electricity than New York City, operating one of the country's largest bus systems, and many of those residents were, in fact, young women.
They came from all over the U.S., some from right there, like Toni Peters, one of the women you spoke to. Her family's farm was seized to make way for the town. Others got on buses in New York City and Texas and Alabama to come there, many leaving home for the first time. Denise, what kind of jobs were they doing?
That varied widely, much as it did throughout the war. As we know, World War II was a moment of increased opportunity in the workplace for women across the United States. For the Manhattan Project, because Oak Ridge was itself a functioning town, there were jobs such as, you know, there were secretarial jobs, there were jobs in the cafeteria, and there were jobs, of course, in the plants that were working to enrich uranium for the bomb. Some people, like Colleen, one of the women I feature, she inspected pipes all day. Now, she didn't know where these pipes were going, and she didn't know what was going to be going through them or what purpose they served, but she was trained very specifically to inspect pipes. Toni, the young lady you mentioned earlier, she worked as a secretary. She worked filing all day. And even though she was actually in the headquarters building, she still did not have any idea what the project was about. Other women, scientists, might have analyzed compounds in a lab. Other women worked operating machines that were actually helping separate isotopes of uranium, but of course they did not know that. So the jobs available to them really did vary greatly, some of them Manhattan Project specific, and others just the kinds of jobs you would find in any town.
Without any information about what they were actually doing, rumors swirled. And there were a couple that you write about, you know, one that people who were hired to empty the garbage were illiterate. And there were public information officers deliberately fueling some of them. Now, this was a town of 75,000 surrounded by fencing and watchtowers and guards. I mean, how did this affect them? How did they talk about that experience of living in a place that sort of looks like prison?
Well, what was interesting is I think one of the things that made it, I mean, certainly it was unnerving on a certain level. But then what most of the women said and the men I interviewed is you just started getting used to it. It was, you know, you went through the gate and wore a badge to get where you needed to go. And, you know, at first when you arrived, that was a little shocking and unnerving. But then after a while, it was just kind of normal. A lot of what got them through, I will say, is that the one thing they were not told a lot, but the one thing that they were told was that this was an important project for the war. And pretty much everybody I interviewed had a brother or, you know, a boyfriend or somebody who was away fighting. And so at this, in this period of time, I mean, it really was, World War II really was the cause of their generation. And I think they were willing, most of them, to put up with the secrecy, and, you know, for that very reason.
We're talking with the writer Denise Kiernan about the thousands of women who worked entirely unwittingly on the Manhattan Project in a secret government-built town in Oak Ridge, Tennessee. It's a subject of her book, The Girls of Atomic City. Now, Denise, this is an era of overt sexism and racism in American culture and social structures. Many of these women were given a kind of independence in this experience. You spoke to one, Katie Strickland. She's an African-American who did janitorial services at CEW. That's the Clinton Engineering Works. What was her experience compared to other women?
Well, because there was racism was and segregation was the law of the Oak Ridge Reservation, which was also called the Clinton Engineer Works. For Katie, it was, I felt so privileged to be able to speak with her because, you know, she was sharing a part of her life that in many ways was very difficult and stressful for her. However, the pay that she received was what encouraged her to go ahead and live under these circumstances, as, you know, as upsetting and angering and frustrating as they were. And I think the most heartbreaking aspect of her existence was the fact that African-American couples married were not allowed to live together, mm-hmm. and they were not allowed to bring their children. So Katie and her husband, Willie, had to leave their children with Katie's mother back in Alabama, and they would send as much money as they could back home whenever it was possible. And it was a very, very trying time for that reason. But at the same time, Katie still lives there today. I saw her, you know, just a couple weeks ago. So, you know, oddly enough, that place became home to her.
Many, many of the couples did. You keep this secret, referring to the project throughout the book until 1945, when the Undersecretary of War, Robert Patterson, sends a letter to all of those working in Oak Ridge on August 7th, congratulating them on their patriotic duty. The headline in the Oak Ridge Journal after the two bombs were dropped says, "Oak Ridge attacks the Japanese." It's so interesting. They all took this on very sort of personally, but how did they feel? Tens of thousands of people were killed. They were working in secret on something that a lot of people had great ethical qualms about.
It was it's a fascinating part of the book for me. It was fascinating to research and do that particular line of interviewing because for so many people, the realization of what the bomb was came sort of in waves. I mean, I don't know what it's like to live in a world without the atomic bomb. I don't know what it's like to live in a world without the idea of fallout shelters and nuclear winter and somebody who can push a button and, you know, unleash something so incredibly devastating and destructive. These people straddled two worlds, really, and they were around for the dawn of the nuclear age and were a very significant part of it. For some people, the first thing they heard was just, there's a new super bomb. And okay, there's a new super bomb. Then there's the address from the president, and Oak Ridge is mentioned.
Right.
So they know they had something to do with the new super bomb, but specifically, no one was taken aside and said, here's the role that you did. And there was a real mix of feelings. I mean, one woman I spoke to, I think, really kind of captured it best. She said, you know, I was so, because around them, the entire country, of course, is thrilled the war is over.
Right.
And this one woman said, you know, I was so happy the war was over, but I was so sad when I learned about what happened because, you know, I really like people. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was a very, very simple and kind of very poignant way to put it. So there were a lot of mixed feelings. No one no one I talked to was happy about the devastation. Some people, you know, felt very sad. And some people were just happy that their brothers or boyfriends or fathers were coming home.
Denise Kiernan, author of three books, most recently The Girls of Atomic City, The Untold Story of the Woman Who Helped Win World War II. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
You will find much more on the book at wordofmouthradio.org, including a slideshow of photographs from Oak Ridge from the National Archive. That's all at wordofmouthradio.org. You can also find links to follow us and post your thoughts on Facebook and on Twitter.